Brad and John.
You want to talk some trash?
Well, that was a bummer about Tim Conway passing away at the age of 85. Saturday nights for me, Brad, when I was a kid, is the Carol Burnett Show. You know, Tim Conway, Harvey Korman, and you would...
Yeah. Conway, my mom loved that stuff.
He would crack up, you know, Harvey Korman, of course. You would. Those were the best moments. When he'd crack up Harvey Korman or Carol Burnett, he'd make them laugh, and that was just... Gosh, that was the best.
Someone referred to him on one of the online posts I saw that one of comedy's top second bananas, you know, is gone. Like, he always would defer to Carol and let her shine and stuff, but he was funny in his own right.
He won Emmys. He won a Golden Globe for his work on that show. And Carol Burnett said, Tim's goal in life was to destroy Harvey Korman. Yeah, and we all benefited from that goal in life. He was also on McHale's Navy, and he voiced Barnacle Boy on SpongeBob SquarePants. I don't know who Barnacle Boy is. Do you know who Barnacle Boy is?
Yeah. It's been a while since I've seen it, but I remember the name.
Okay.
One time, I had a chance to interview Tim Conway, and things are rolling. He's telling a story. Everybody in the room is laughing, and it was like one of those scenes in Goodfellas where everybody's laughing, and I'm like, you know what would be funny, Tim? And he's like, everything stops, and he's like, no, you tell me what would be funny. You tell me what would be funny. And then I said something that he'd already done, and he's like, yeah, I did that a long time ago. And I'm like, I just killed this interview. I just killed it. Stepped right in it.
You tell me, three-time Emmy winner, Golden Globe winner,
what
for
is
comedy.
Funny. I'm sure he was smiling on the other end of the thing. He knew he had me and just was crushing, grinding me under his boot heel and laughing about it.
Those moments. Yeah. I've had those moments too, man, where you're like, you ask a question, and you're like, I have no business asking this question. Yeah. And my worst moments, Brad, came in the sports locker rooms in the early 80s when I was 17, 18, 19 years old covering teams. And I was tasked with asking questions of these pro athletes. And I'm asking them, why did you strike out? You know, I mean, they're getting a why did you strike out or why did you fumble the ball? How come you threw an interception? Why didn't you throw it to that guy? Kind of. And they're getting that question from an 18-year-old, 19-year-old. There were times, I remember one, John McNamara was a manager of the California Angels. And they had lost to the Brewers, and I had to go in, and I had to ask him questions. I was working for one of them.
Why did you make that call?
And it was one of those, why did you? And this guy, you know, he's 55, 60-year-old, salty guy, looked at me, and he just shook his head, looked down at me, and just shook his head like, why am I dealing with you? Why, you know, I don't even think he said anything.
I got wads of chew spit in my cheek that are older than you.
What are you? So Roger Daltrey on stage the other night in New York at Madison Square Garden, and he got mad. He's allergic to marijuana, believe it or not. How could you work with Keith Moon for all those years? Well, I guess because Keith was more into
elephant tranquilizers.
Than marijuana. Anyways, Daltrey's on stage, and he gets mad at some folks who are smoking marijuana. Well, here's what he says.
I've got to tell you, all the ones smoking grass down the front here, I'm totally allergic to it. I'm not kidding. Whoever it is down there, you my night, and you make me really... I'm allergic to that, and my voice just goes... So...
So he said, I'm totally allergic to it. Whoever is down there, you effed my night. You made me really, I'm allergic to that bleep. And my voice goes, you heard him make the noise. It sucks. So F you. Now, in 2015,
they better hope the wind at T-Mobile Park is blowing out to center field or I guess wherever, away from the stage.
Daltrey threatened to end a concert at the Nassau Coliseum a few years ago when someone lit up a joint near the stage. He told the fan to stick it up your bleep and bleep. I think it's just as we have evolved here into a more of a no-smoking society, and you can't smoke here and you can't smoke, you're not around it as much. And so your reactions to it are stronger. Yeah. You know,
or the product's getting more intense, you know.
Yeah. But I'm sure it's not backstage anymore. I'm sure he insists that There can't be any of that backstage. So he's in an environment backstage now where none of that is around. So he gets out to the front of the stage, and it's there, and it...
Sometimes, you know, you're watching a concert and somebody will let a vape cloud go and you're like, did that come off the stage or is that from somebody in the crowd? Yeah. Was that part of the show?
All right, now let's take you to the Clapton show. Monday night, Clapton's at London's Royal Albert Hall doing a thing. And he's going to be doing some things here in the U.S. this summer. There's a few dates that he's playing. Anyways, there are a couple of performances that surprise people. He opened the show... This was Monday night. He opened the show with Doris Day's Que Sera Sera.
We heard it the other day.
How about that?
Like now, an instrumental version, or is he singing it?
I imagine he was singing it.
Hmm.
You know, I don't.
Que Sera Sera.
I don't have any audio of that, but that's pretty cool. And then he wrapped up the show with his first ever performance of Prince's Purple Rain. Why? Why Prince's Purple Rain? Well, when Prince died in 2016, Clapton was one of the first to pay tribute. He said of Prince, he was a true genius, a huge inspiration for me. In the 80s, I was out on the road in a massive downward spiral with drink and drugs. I saw Purple Rain in a cinema in Canada. I had no idea who he was. How about that? Clapton saying in 1985 he had no idea who Prince was.
Well, that was kind of his breaking thing. I mean, he had little red Corvette and
yes.
You know, DMSR and stuff like that, and some of his 1999 hits.
Yeah,
and stuff.
He had those things on the charts. He was a
maybe
big
not
deal.
So much in England, maybe.
I guess not. But anyways, he said, I had no idea who he was. It was like a bolt of lightning in the middle of my depression and the dreadful state of the music culture at that time. It gave me hope.
You remember all the beer commercials and the Genesis and the Eric Clapton and the Michelob commercials and all that the beer music that was out?
Yeah.
That was right about that time, wasn't it?
I guess. Well, he said in the middle of my depression and the dreadful state of the music culture at that time, it gave me hope. He was like a light in the darkness. I went back to my hotel, surrounded by empty beer cans, and he wrote a tune. He says, I cannot believe that he's gone. So that you know, we've talked about this before. How Prince it touched so many different rock and rollers, classic rockers especially, with his, you know, his...
He
his
had everybody.
Not only his guitar playing, but his songwriting and everything else. Yep, he got them all. So that is the trash. Do we have some Clapton we're going
to... Well, play? I thought you wanted to play him playing
Purple
Rain. Oh, yeah,
should we play a little bit of that? Let's play a little bit.
Never they called you anything. Only wanted one time to see you laughing.
To hear him do the high parts at the end, the falsetto.
Springsteen is. Remember, we played Springsteen singing "Purple Rain." He couldn't.
He couldn't get up there.
That is great stuff. There, that was Clapton from Monday night at London's Royal Albert Hall. We got some Clapton here. Brad and John, KISM. It's one of my favorites. See if you can pick out the female vocalist on this.